Welcome to a special edition of Coffee House Shops. I'm Fraser Nelson. In this edition, we're going to talk about the NHS and technology. Now, the two have had a fairly tortured relationship in the past. There was that £10 million spent on the NHS IT system that didn't quite work out the way people thought. Then recently, the cyber attack that had parts of the NHS paralysed. The NHS is a massive organisation. If it gets technology right, the gains could be huge. So why has our health service found it so hard to reform in the way that other industries have done? And what, if anything, can help? I'm joined now by Professor Tony Young, the very first Director of Innovation for NHS England, by Tara Donnelly, who's the Chief Executive of Health Innovation Networks, which has been set up by the NHS to accelerate the use of technology, and by Neil Mesher, the Chief Executive of Philips, which has kindly sponsored this podcast. So if I can start with you, Professor Young. Now, you're the first innovation director the NHS has ever had. Now, I remember talking to Simon Stevens just before he became chief executive of the NHS, and he was saying that the technology opportunity was absolutely huge. Here you have the NHS, one of the biggest organisations on the planet, but it's barely begun to use technology in the ways that other industries have. Certainly it's quite far behind its American counterparts, which is where he used to work. Now, he saw technology as a brilliant opportunity to get better NHS care for not very much more money, but it's proven a lot harder than anyone envisaged. Why do you think this is?
So I think it's one of the most exciting times I've seen in my career to be in medicine at the moment. Sometimes people look at the challenges that lie ahead of us in healthcare and just see the future piled high with difficulty. But as Simon Stevens, my chief executive, have said, actually, that I think that's the time for real leaders to step forward and actually to look at using disruptive things that can really transform healthcare and the way we deliver it. So has healthcare really changed over thousands of years, you know, since ancient Egypt? Really, which was the first representation, one of the first we've got in history of that doctor-patient relationship. Actually, could medicine and healthcare be disrupted? Could patients become empowered? Are we seeing in many aspects of our lives industry coming and playing a role? So you might look at Amazon or Google or Uber or Airbnb, all changing the way we live our lives and do things. But what impact have those technologies and companies had in healthcare yet? Not a great deal, but actually I think the future looks like, instead of doctors very much, we've always been the gatekeepers to both healthcare knowledge and healthcare technology and therefore the care that comes with that. But actually, as we look to the future, are we going to see other sectors and industry in particular coming forward, disrupting that relationship so that the future of doctors is more as the sort of the navigators and advisors through the healthcare system, and actually increasingly technology and technology companies helping to empower patients, empower citizens to take a greater role in their healthcare moving forward. And I think that opportunity is there. It's a grand new frontier. It's really exciting, and I've got an opportunity to help do something about that.
Now, Tara Donnelly, technology doesn't normally need an invitation to disrupt. Nobody said to Google, please come along and transform internet, come along and do email. They just kind of did it. And yet we can look at sector after sector. If a taxi industry didn't beg Uber to come along, it just did it. Why is it that the technology companies, who are so good at innovating in so many areas, are managing to arrive far later in the world of healthcare? What is it about healthcare that makes this slightly more difficult for innovations to succeed?
The speed of adoption of smartphones has outclassed anything else. So electricity took 46 years to reach a quarter of Americans. Smartphones did that in 2 years. So we have this incredible phenomenon. And in the UK now, 81% of people own a smartphone. And if you look at people between 18 and 44, that's 91%. So we're getting to this point where you can be very disadvantaged and yet you still have access to the internet and all the resources that a smartphone gives you. But not enough people are using that for their health. You're absolutely right. Why is it more difficult in the NHS? Well, I think we have some great strengths in that it's a universal system. So we've got fantastic primary care level data, less so on the hospital side. But we're also quite fragmented. And I think looking at, as somebody who has worked in the NHS her whole career, but is now focused around innovation, the fragmentation has got greater with the Lansley reforms in particular. And as an innovator, you'd want to have greater unification, if anything.
Really? Because normally the complaint about the NHS is that it's a vast bureaucracy. You're saying that the reverse is true, but it's been split into too many fragments.
The innovators that we work with, one of their frustrations is that they can have a conversation to get a digital innovation in one place, and then they have to have exactly the same conversation again.
You mean in a GP's practice?
In one hospital and then the same in another hospital, equally with a GP practice. And the programme that we're running is to try and prevent the second conversation being as difficult as the first. So I think there is an issue about monolithic bureaucracy, but actually at the local level, cultures, the way a hospital or a GP practice feels from place to place is incredibly different. So that's why we're running a programme that's just in its first year to try and get more of those digital innovations in front of many more patients.
Neil Mesher, the NHS, healthcare in general, hasn't been digitised. The revolution has been slower in coming to this sector. Is this simply because it isn't particularly compatible with new technology? I mean, do you see this as a problem, something that's gone wrong in the last 10 years and isn't going to go right anytime soon?
No, I think if we just take a step back and just look at where we are, I think there's a huge opportunity right now. I do genuinely believe the stars are aligning. What is possible from a technology perspective, where the population at large is actually looking to engage with technology, I believe there's a huge chance for us to step up. And what's particularly interesting from a healthcare industry perspective is that I talk to many of my colleagues and counterparts across the healthcare system, and we want to play a bigger role in terms of the way that healthcare is delivered. From being a traditional OEM where we make equipment and we sell that equipment in. Original equipment manufacturer. From being a manufacturer in this space to actually stepping up and actually starting to share some of the challenges that there are within the healthcare system and look at how we can actually work with the healthcare system to improve outcomes and lower costs. So to actually play a much bigger role in how healthcare is developed going forward.
But Professor Young, we heard from Tara there how a huge number of young people have got smartphones, 90%. But isn't it the case that the NHS is, to a huge extent, its resources are spent on the over 65s? And we know that, I think, amongst disabled adults, something like 20% have never used the internet. Amongst over 65s, 18% have got smartphones. I mean, the people who the NHS is most cause to have contact with tend to be those who are, for whatever reason, not particularly accustomed to handling technology. So it's very easy to say let them eat smartphones when in fact a lot of them will not want to use this technology and won't know how.
So first of all, I would never say something like let them eat smartphones. That is not the right approach. So what I would say is what we cannot do as we look to the future to build a new health service in the future, what we can't do is bring technology in that is going to increase social isolation and exclusion. What we have to do is use technology that helps people be more included in their communities, to help them feel more socially connected with others around them. It was Maya Angelou, the American author, who said in one of her poems, "People will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget the way you made them feel." So how is it that we can bring forward technology that makes people feel better about it, feel more included? So a one-size-fits-all approach, where you might say, this is the great internet platform and people can use it on their smartphone, we're moving away from that.
Can you give an example of something which the NHS has used which you think meets that description?
Well, yeah, so there'll be lots of things. So you could look at how we work with people. So for some people, using smartphone apps is going to be right, but for others, they'll be more familiar and accustomed with their television and getting services through their TV. Most people and houses in the country have a TV, and with digital healthcare systems and networks, and how can we connect people through that? So one example I would give is, and this is at my university actually, we've been working with Silverline, the charity for the elderly and for people who have been feeling lonely. And we've been doing a trial where we've been connecting them not just on the telephone line where you can ring someone up and have a conversation with them, but then there was this program called Silverline Circle where you can actually not just connect people on a conference call, but actually on a video conference call where people through their televisions can be connected together. Now, you might want to discuss Coronation Street or whatever TV program you've been watching, or show someone something you've just bought. But actually, can we use technology that allows people to share experiences, reconnect them back into society in different ways, and reduce a real important aspect of care? So loneliness, the psychological conditions, depression, and all sorts of other things have a big impact on healthcare. So it's not just about can we replace tablets with smartphones and apps. It's how can we use technology in a bespoke way that's personalised to individuals that makes a difference to them in their communities.
New measure.
Again, just building on that, I think we need to be a bit careful that we don't fall into the trap of this being a process which is technology-led. Exactly as Tony says, we've been working to deliver home healthcare services now for a number of years. We're very successful.
What's an example of a home healthcare service?
Well, we monitor people's vital signs in a home environment. And for some of the elderly people that we work with, Motiva, a TV-based set-top box, is a perfect solution and it collects the data in the right way. For other people, it will be a tablet. The challenge that we see, however, it's much more how do you take that data and use that data within a care pathway. And I think we need to put more effort into thinking about how you adopt a different care pathway than necessarily worrying about how do you collect that data.
Sarah?
I think we also have to be really careful that we don't make assumptions about what technologies people want to make, either on the basis of age or diagnosis. So some of the evidence is really striking on this. There's a product called RPATH, which helps people who've had a high blood glucose level get their risk of diabetes right down, and we've been doing some work in Northwest London on this. And essentially on the programme, everyone loses weight, but it's the over 65s who lose the most weight. This is a digital-only platform. We were quite surprised to see that, but it's clearly working for them. And another one, which is a product that's exclusively for people with psychosis, where you might think, gosh, the adherent rates won't be high for this product. So in the trial that we ran, about half of the eligible people said they'd like to participate. And after 90 days, 90% was still using the tool. Now that's higher than Pokemon Go. That's an adherence rate that any of the gaming companies would be absolutely thrilled with.
Tony Young, has that been your experience then? That people are more receptive than we might think?
So I think if you start making presumptions about individuals, how am I going to understand what someone who's of a certain age with a certain cultural background and experience going to see and want? There was a really interesting study from a professor from Aachen University in Germany just a few years ago, Frank Piller, his name was, and he looked at asking questions to over 1,000 people. Half of them were industry or carers, and the other half, I think, were the over 70s in German Senior Citizens League. And the results were fascinating because industry or carers, when they were asked the question, what is the key thing that the over 70s would like to help them live happier, healthier, longer lives? And they came up with a new gizmo or gadget or robot or something that would help them around the house. And the over 70s came up with one of two things. And it was either a social networking platform to reconnect them because they identified as they'd retired and they were getting older, their social networks were going down, or a dating site. So just because you're over... Now, it may be the Germans who are over 70, but just because you're over 70, it doesn't mean you don't want love and companionship and those aren't still really important things. Sure. Would I, as the National Clinical Lead for Innovation for the Health Service of England, have come out with that result? I wouldn't have predicted it, which is why you have to have citizens, healthy citizens, as well as patients involved in how we redesign healthcare to start with.
Now, Tony, you're talking there about a bit of the social aspect of medical care, but Tara Donnelly, if we can go back to healthcare. I mean, there was a recent study by the US Center for Disease Control that 86% of healthcare costs are due to a preventable disease. So there's a lot of money that could be saved, because fundamentally the NHS wants to save lives but also save money. And this is the question, what investment could you make now that would pay for itself, hopefully, socially in terms of reduced diseases and also financially in terms of reduced diseases?
So I think we have quite a range of things developing, and you're absolutely right. In the past, it was about communicable disease. Now, big tsunami is chronic disease. We're living longer, thanks to successful medicine, but we're commonly living with a range of chronic diseases, many of which have features which are entirely preventable.
So we're talking about diabetes?
Diabetes is huge, but there's a whole bunch of things, kind of broadly metabolic syndrome, so high blood pressure, fat around the middle, that's causing a whole range of things. About one day a week of a GP's workload is managing people with chronic joint pain. So there's a huge number of things.
And
of course,
where does technology fit into?
Of course, people with any of those diseases will spend a tiny fraction of their time in front of healthcare professionals. And I'm completely with Tony. The value of the face-to-face cannot be underestimated. But they've got, you know, 98% of their lives they're managing themselves. So devices that help track how you're doing are incredibly important. And we talk about that group of behavioural change that's amenable to help with technology is a really important area, and technology has a great role to play.
But Neil Mesher, these sort of things tend in Britain anyway to be the exception rather than the rule. I mean, Philips Future Health Index did a survey of 19 countries, of which they found that only two, in Britain and oddly Sweden, did people think the treatment was more important than prevention. So is there a culture in the British Health Service but tends not to think about what Tara was just talking about, but tends to think about what happens when you show up in A&E and not so much as how you can stop people turning up to the GP's clinic in the first place? And might that be because, I mean, take, you know, the American system, they've got health insurance, so they have this incentive to make sure to go to the gym and what have you, because that means that the insurer forks out less money. Under the British system, we don't have that, really. The NHS is just there for treatment. So do you think that the NHS structure has let Britain in healthcare in general, to be more focused on treatment and less focused on prevention?
It's a well-used phrase. Do we have a healthcare system or a sick care system? I think if I go back to the Future Health Index, though, there's some really interesting data coming out of that. And what we're seeing now, I think, is that the examples that Tara referred to are much more common than you might think. And we've got some very, very hard data that shows that in the older age group, people over 55, 26% are using connected health. Now, of that population, 57% of that population are then discussing those results with a healthcare professional. Now, I think that's a huge step forward in terms of thinking differently about your own health and taking personal control of that health situation.
Right. Well, I'm not yet 55, but approaching it, but I'm still, I haven't heard of any of these apps or technological things. Of course, there's a Fitbit. Everybody's got this little thing around their wrist that tells them how many paces they've walked today, but a gimmick, surely.
I think it's a whole sort of root of this conversation that we're having is we need a new contract with our citizens and our patients. If you look at the future, if you look at where we are now, we have 20% of our population smoke, a third of people drink too much alcohol, and two-thirds of people are either overweight or obese.
That's probably the best it's ever been.
So I can't give you the data off the top of my head of which way that's going, but these are causing a range of conditions. And if you look at obesity, for example, in the next few years, that will overtake cancer as the leading cause contributing to death in our country.
Is that because we're making such progress against cancer?
We are making lots of progress in cancer, but now we're that a disease that, okay, smoking caused that and a number of other things, but a disease that actually could just hit sporadically and do that. And suddenly we have a disease that's going to cause so many things that is entirely preventable and we could do something about. So we need to get really serious about prevention. How can we use technology to enable us? How can we work with our population to explain this? So, you know, when the health service was founded, it was founded in a really difficult time for our country. Just after the Second World War, we faced a whole range of acute medical problems. Mm-hmm. People died of heart attacks, of strokes, of cancer and infectious diseases. Well, do you know, now we've made such great inroads. We vaccinate them. We've got advanced chemotherapy, radiotherapy regimes. We've got stents for heart attacks and advanced pharmacology. And for strokes now, we recently announced great advancement in technology. We're going to look to roll out a national program for not just stroke thrombolysis, where we dissolve the clot, but actually a thrombectomy where we start to extract the clot and take it forward. So technology has partnered us and advances in medicine in making such great strides into all those acute conditions when the health service was founded that set us great challenges. Mm-hmm. But now, is the system we have, does it serve us as well as it did in 2017 as when it was formed in 1948? Or when we look at it, and I think someone was saying earlier about the, you know, the chronic issue of chronic disease, 70% of our budget in the NHS goes on the management of chronic disease. Wow. Yet we have a system designed around acute care designed in the late 1940s and early 50s. So does that system we currently have serve us as well today, based around admitting to people to hospital and taking them forward? Or when it's chronic disease, which mostly you have at home and you're managing yourself in partnership with your care providers, is there a role for us to really completely transform healthcare? And does technology have a role to play in that as we move forward?
Neil Mesher, give us an example here. I mean, if we want to move to an NHS system looking more at prevention, more at stopping the obesity epidemic that Professor Young's talking about, what kind of technology is it and how would it be administered?
I think we need to be a bit careful that we don't fall into the trap of talking about technology for technology's sake. At the heart of this, what we're really talking about is the consumerisation of healthcare. And how do you get people to engage in a particular technology? You sell them the benefits And if the benefits are there, and they're demonstrable benefits, then people will engage with that technology.
The benefits being you're healthier, you'll live a longer life.
Absolutely. So we need to be very, very careful. This is not a technology push. This needs to become a consumer pull. And I think if the benefits are there, consumers will pull these technologies. And I think you'll find that things will move very, very quickly, and we'll get to that tipping point where the consumers will pull this kind of technology quicker than the healthcare system can.
Because that's how all the other technology we were talking earlier about, the innovations that have been made, they've been made because people wanted email, they wanted the internet. They've basically got to want healthcare technology to get that quantum leap that you're talking about.
Absolutely. So a great example for me was an acquisition that we made last week, a health and parenting app business.
What does it do with that app?
It provides mums-to-be with information and support as they go through their pregnancy. That particular app has been downloaded 11 million times. It clearly is giving people demonstrable information that they need to help them through their pregnancy. Now, if you can create more of those kind of services, then again, that pull from consumers will be greater than any push that can be given by the healthcare system.
And Professor Young, I mean, you know, really, when it comes to digitizing records, this is something we were promised, I don't know, 10 years ago. It's something the NHS is still struggling with. So one does think that if the NHS struggles with something as basic as taking scrawled notes and putting them on a computer screen and having them generally available, you know, it's not exactly the moon landing. If the NHS struggles with that, then does it not have an institutional problem with adopting more advanced things?
So no one said healthcare was easy. If it was easy, we wouldn't need doctors. And the profession of medicine that has built up over hundreds and thousands of years to understand the complex, wonderful things that our bodies are. And it's, of course, it's really easy to stand up and talk about the things that have gone wrong, and it's
sure.
And everyone,
know,
with hindsight being such a wonderful thing. We are the fifth largest employer on the planet. We have the largest unified healthcare system in history. Of course, it's going to be a challenge to take these things forward, but we're not shying away from that challenge. And NHS England has made a number of announcements about how we're going to step forward to these things. Not with some, I think it was Einstein who said something like, we can't solve the problems we currently face by using the same thinking we used to create them. You know, so we need new thinking and we need new action to take those forward and deliver it. And so, sure, there have been problems in the past and we can sit there and we could talk about them all day long. But, do you know, and it's great to go down the pub, and I love nothing more than having a good old moan with my friends over a pint. It makes me feel a whole lot better. There's something about being a grumpy old man, isn't there, sometimes? But, do you know, that's not what our patients want. That's not what our population want. They want leadership. They want vision of how are we going to get to where we need to get to, which is where we care for the most vulnerable people in our society and take care of their needs, where we produce a healthcare system that's fit for our young, fit, active people and keeping them well also.
Tara?
And I just add that I think it is important to call out where people are doing it, because perhaps the story isn't well known enough about people who really have embraced digitisation. We've just published something about digital leadership in London, and it's talking about those organisations that have taken products from our accelerator programme and spread them. So they're not having the one hospital, second hospital conversation. That's because we give quite a lot of support. We have what we call NHS navigators to work with the company. They give the company support, help them learn about the NHS, and also give them opportunities to talk to the people who make the decisions within organisations. When we work with NHS staff, they're really enthusiastic about getting some of these innovations in. It just seems to take a long time to get there. So what we provide is some bandwidth to help busy clinicians do that sort of thing. So one of the organisations we've worked with has been the London Ambulance Service, which has had a very busy time. It's been getting itself out of special measures, but it's also been able to think about how could we use digital to free up paramedic time. So they are a case study within that document. But I think you're right, if it's not known about where people are doing terrific things, people may think that the average is much lower than it is. So I think we have a responsibility to call out when success is being achieved and how the kind of steps that people have gone through to make that happen.
And Neil Meshed, how much upside is there in the NHS using digitisation and technology properly? For example, do you think it could get rid of 10% of its costs? Could it get significantly better results? I'm trying to work out whether we're looking at something which will help on the margins or something which could really stop significant numbers of people getting to hospital in the first place, or something which could basically transform the NHS in 5 or 10 years.
Our fundamental belief is that in the medium to long term, digital will actually be fundamentally transformational in the way that healthcare is delivered, both in the acute sector but also in primary care.
And medium to long term being what, 10 years, 15 years?
10-year, 15-year horizon. Mm. So it'll fundamentally transform the way that healthcare is consumed by the population. We shouldn't forget that the power of the NHS internationally as well. And there are organisations like my own, like Philips, that looks at the NHS and sees a fantastic world-class organisation that we can actually work with within the UK to actually deliver some tremendous breakthroughs in the way that healthcare is delivered, and actually use that as a advantage to UK PLC internationally in terms of delivering growth and prosperity for the country as well. So not only can we actually deliver a better healthcare system, but we can also actually fuel growth within the UK economy.
But Tara Donnelly, there are more tech developers in London now than there are in Silicon Valley. So surely with the NHS, with the investment, we should be able to nurture new technology as well as buy it when it's been completed by other companies.
Absolutely. And that's the reason that we set up DigitalHealth.London, which is a collaboration across London with the three academic health science networks, MedCity, and indeed the academic health science centres as well, to try and make it much simpler for great digital ideas to scale across the capital. We are just closing the first year of our accelerator programme, which has taken 31 of the best companies and given them very structured support.
So it's like venture capital kind of thing? Or?
We don't give them money, actually.
You give them what?
We give them a priceless package of support instead. And the money that we do have, we spend to support the NHS.
Right.
Because actually, we think it's that way round, and so do the people on the programme. We've just asked the Net Promoter Score, and it's slightly higher than Amazon and Apple, the people you were talking about earlier. So I think the companies feel well supported.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really delighted that one of the patient innovators who came up, he hacked his own colostomy bag to do a Bluetooth link to his phone. So if you imagine, if you have to have a bag in the middle of the night, you get no warning if it fills or if your child has a bag, which can be a real dignity problem. Mm. This gentleman managed to, he tried really hard to get traction within the NHS, but it was difficult in the end. Got some sales in America, but he's now just started his first successful sale with the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital with our support. So that's the kind of work that we've been doing.
It's not just companies, and it is really important. There was an article recently, as can startups save the NHS? And normally, startups find risk quite friendly and they're prepared to take big risks to make them, and the NHS might seem averse to risk because we have patient safety and we have to proceed in a safe manner. But actually, we've just launched a year ago something called our Clinical Entrepreneur Programme, which takes, before people have formed companies, clinicians within the National Health Service to equip them with skills, knowledge and experience from the commercial and startup world to help them then grow on to programmes like TARA's and the Academic Health Science Networks. So in year one, we appointed 103 junior doctors. They've now founded over 50 startups themselves. They've raised, amazingly, in the first year, just under £50 million of private sector funds to help drive those ideas forward. They've impacted more than 6 million patients and professionals. So this is not because NHS England is great or this programme is. What we've done is we've unearthed something going on, I think, in one of the largest employers on the planet, where people don't want to just carry on delivering more of the same. They want to improve healthcare. Now, it's not just clinicians, but it's patients and citizens as well who want to come to the heart of healthcare and help us redesign it. So programmes like the Clinical Entrepreneur Programme and like Tara's and programme at DigitalHealth.London, working in partnership with industry like Philips and other companies around. I think it was Theodore Roosevelt in his Man in the Arena speech who said something like, the challenges we face are grand and what we need to do is we all stand up out of our seats, roll up our sleeves and enter the arena. Then we can solve the grand challenges we face. And I think by working in partnership between the NHS, our universities, our academic health science network, our industries, our providers, our local authorities, all coming together to redesign healthcare, we've truly got and bringing our patients and our healthy citizens to the heart as we imagine it. And I would also say including our children at the heart, because they're the ones who are going to be with us for longest, helping them get us to redesign healthcare as we move forward. Then we've got a chance of getting it right for all.
My guests in the arena today have been Professor Tony Young, Tara Donnelly and Neil Mesher. Thank you all very much indeed.